Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, January 11th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken, and as always, you can get in touch with us by sending us an email to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com for all the latest happenings with our little gay radio show engine that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. And if you have been following us on Facebook, you know that right this very second, it is our 150th episode of This Show Is So Gay. We wanted to do something extra special for this episode, so I reached out to five of my favorite past guests to chat about what motivates them in doing the great things that they do. So let's get started with special surprise guest number one. Sharon Staple is the executive director of the New York City Anti-Violence Project, an organization that is dedicated to eliminating hate violence, sexual assault, stalking, and domestic violence in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and HIV-affected communities through counseling, advocacy, organizing, and public education, and a whole lot of radio interviews. Trust me on that one. She was first on this show back in March of 2011 when I had a wicked case of the flu, and I did wicked. I put that in there because you're so New England, Sharon. That was just for you.
New England, thank you.
And I was doing shots of NyQuil before we went on the air, but then I think she hired me. Sharon Staple, welcome to our 150th episode of This Show Is So Gay.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is so exciting. Thanks for having me.
It just feels like it's exciting over and over again, which when we release the This Show Is So Gay gag reel, you'll know. So to answer,
I think I've officially earned my role as the moderator of the
Without question. Let me tell you that you will be receiving a This Show Is So Gay magnet. It's coming in the mail. I'm not kidding.
I can't wait.
So first and foremost, everybody's been writing in and asking, you did hire me. What kind of employee have I been?
Well, you were really, really good for the first couple of weeks, and then you disappeared. There was a note about NyQuil and must go back to Vermont, and we never saw you again.
And that led to some sort of action. I don't understand. That's my MO, Sharon. Listen. All right. We got serious things to talk about. Serious things. So I threw out the mission of the Anti-Violence Project, which is, it's so well worded. But I'm imagining that the day-to-day operations, in addition to the radio interviews that you do, the day-to-day operations look a little bit different for you all on the ground.
They do. They, I mean, you know, the radio interviews obviously take up the vast majority.
I would imagine so.
But no, I think it looks it does look a little bit different on the ground. I think we are a very, very busy group of folks doing a lot of really focused work around the anti-violence mission that we have, and that plays out day to day differently every day. But generally, what you would see if you were here in our offices at the Anti-Violence Project is our client services department, which provides direct services to survivors of violence. Answering the hotline, talking to people who are walking in to talk about violence that occurred to them, or working with folks who are working through the trauma of the violence. And our community organizing and public advocacy folks doing the day-to-day work that it takes to be out in the community, be talking to people about AVP, that we're here, why we exist, and how we can support folks. And we do that on the city, state, and national level, so we're sort of, you know, everywhere all the time when we're able to be. So it's a little bit of a beehive going on here. I like to think of it as very strategic chaos.
Nice. Well, but then there is the flip side where this is, I would imagine, extraordinarily draining work. And you know, look, I love talking to folks who work in nonprofits and people who are looking at marriage equality and adoption rights, and certainly those have their own set of stressors. But talking about violence day in, day out has got to take its toll. Describe the type of person that gets into that work.
Well, I think there are lots of different ways to address violence and to be anti-violent. I think the folks who work for us who are you know, answering the hotline and accompanying people to police departments or courts or hospitals, and the folks who are out in the community talking about recent incidents or policy changes or trying to listen to the community and talk about what they need, it's a very specific personality. I think it's somebody who is both either personally or just through their experiences in the world, very connected to the impact that violence can have on a person or a community, and also somebody who's really motivated to be out and out in both senses of the word, but out and really engaging in mm-hmm. the violence and engaging in the impact of the violence. But more importantly, and I think the thing that really does sustain people, is engaging in the solutions to prevent violence.
Nice. Nice. Well, one of the narratives for this 150th episode that I wanted to throw out to all of our guests was just the idea that, yes, this work is fraught with challenges, even putting on a gay radio show, fraught with challenges every now and then. But then you talk to people and you cover issues and look, I've had the opportunity over the past 149, 150 shows to talk to people I never dreamed I would have been able to speak with. So the payoffs are incredible. Tell me, was there a time for you that you knew, okay, it's difficult work, but this is so the right path for me?
Yeah, I mean, there are always times, right, where you sort of think, oh, look at how this is all coming together, and mm-hmm. it's beautiful, and it's clicking, and yes, this is the right thing, or some of the times where nothing is happening the right way, and it's not going easily or smoothly, and you think, but this is still the right thing to do. But I think that the sort of moment in my life was just a few years ago when I was about 19 years old.
Oh, 2 years ago. Okay. Cheers.
When I, as a part of an internship that I was taking for a college class, I was working at a battered women's shelter and had to go through a very extended training around how to be a counselor advocate, similar actually to a training that we do at AVP, where all of a sudden the issues that I had been thinking about and largely thinking about in very isolated ways around racism, around classism, around sexism, around homophobia, all sort of the intersections became immediately sort of clear and understandable and challenging in that sort of really good way that challenging can be mm-hmm. when we started talking about violence. And I thought, oh, you know, this is the language that I've been looking for, and this is the lens, this is the paradigm, this is the strategies that I want to employ in this world to get to the root of all of these things. Violence just resonated with me, if that is not too weird a way to put it.
No.
But it made a lot of sense, because the flip side is then the solutions are around safety, around equality, around equity. And that really spoke to me and my brain and the way that I think about things. And I think that was the moment where I thought, oh, I get these people, and I get this language, and I get this work, and so that's what I've been doing, you know, for the past 5 years since I was.
Can you just increase it? I said two. I was spotting you a couple.
It's always so hard once the years start to pass to keep track.
It's that kind of day, let me tell you. Well, look, we always want people to be able to get involved, and we could go. I think if I hadn't put a lot of thought into it, I would ask you, you know, what can people do to get more involved with AVP? But we have people all over the world listening to the show who want to make the pledge to be anti-violence and pro-community. So if they're not in the New York City area, and if they are, they can get involved with you all, which would be fantastic. But say they're not in the New York City area, which I hear there's some people that aren't.
There's a couple.
What can they do to be anti-violent and pro-community?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of things that folks can do, and I think that there is that sort of structured volunteer organization experience that can be really, really useful for people and can really create a great sense of community and doing this work together. And there are actually anti-violence programs throughout the country, and I would encourage folks actually to go on our website and look to see if there's an organization near you. And there is one in Vermont called RU12.
Of course, yes.
But I think the question sometimes is bigger than that. We talk to people a lot about what it is to be anti-violent, and I think sometimes it's just a decision to see violence when it occurs and not to ignore it and not to downplay it, not to think that it's just this thing in and of itself, but to recognize it as a way that inequality or oppression or just putting someone down can be a part of this whole structure and this whole system, and deciding as a person to say, I'm not going to take that anymore. I'm not going to stay silent. I'm going to say something about it. I think, you know, just having those conversations with your family or your friends can be very revolutionary in a way. And I think that it makes you start to think about your entire world, like, what is what does my employment policy look like around LGBTQ and HIV-affected people? Like, what do we do for survivors of violence where I work or where I live or where I go to school? How can I think about ways that I can plug into those structures or systems, or even just have the conversation? Because we just don't talk about violence in as clear a way as we could. And until we start to do that, we're actually not going to get to the conversation about safety and about what it is to be safe.
Right, because then it just perpetuates that culture of silence, and that doesn't really help anybody. That doesn't help.
Exactly.
So give everybody the website that we should be going to learn more about all the great things you guys are doing.
It's www.avp for antiviolenceproject.org, O-R-G.
Now, there is one quote on the website that I do not understand and would like to just get your riff on it real quick. I'm gonna.
You didn't tell me there was gonna be a quiz, Phil.
There is a quiz, so I will quote it for you, and I just want to get your honest reaction, because I assume you have to call the webmaster, and because this can't be right. Quote: AVP is not currently hiring. Please stay tuned for future announcements. Now, I just don't understand. Is it me?
It's not you directly.
Okay.
It's really, you know, this is always a sequence of events, and I'm sure that the job posting that comes out tomorrow is going to have nothing to do.
Just in time. Although, to be serious, it actually is quite significant to have a major nonprofit have all of your positions filled right now and be fully staffed, which is, I think, not the norm for a lot of folks doing the type of work you're doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there are two things. I think one is we are actually fully staffed in the sense that all of the positions that we currently have are staffed, which is an amazing and wonderful thing, especially in this economy, and something that I'm deeply, deeply grateful for. You know, I think that with all nonprofits, there's always more work to be done than you have people to do the
right
work. And, you know, certainly everyone wears six hats and does a billion things. And so, you know, if we could post 10 more positions tomorrow, that still wouldn't be all of the work in the world that needs to be done. But for now, I feel like the Antiviolence Project is a definite force for good and safety in New York City and beyond, and that's because we have these amazing staff people.
Yeah.
And all of our volunteers and our board members who this is for them, their mission in life, and that's an amazing thing.
Oh, well, it's just an absolute treat to be able to feature you guys on the show. I love
Thank
the work
you
that you're
so
doing.
Much.
I love the work that you're doing. So
Thank
you're
going
to keep doing it?
I am going to keep doing it. We are all going to keep doing it, and eventually we won't have to do it anymore.
And then no more radio interviews. We're going to reach that goal.
Well, then I'll have to figure something else to do so that I can be on the, not just any old radio show, but this show is so gay radio show.
It's an absolute pleasure. Sharon, my best to the staff. Tell them I miss them. I'll be back to visit, you know, to pick up my check.
They are wondering where you've been, so I'll let them know that I finally got a chance to check in with Ken. Yeah.
It's called the work-at-home policy. Something that I started there at the AVP.
That's awesome.
Sharon, all the best. Please keep doing this work.
Thank you so much, Ken. Thanks for having me on the show, and congratulations. 150 shows. That's a really big deal. Thank you.
Thanks, Sharon.
Bye.
Bye. All right, folks, and we are back. Singer-songwriter Daniel Gray is a guy who is out there to get your feet moving through his words, through his beats, and through his incredible energy, which we're going to dissect right now. He was first on the show in October of 2009, and then I know he was on again, but something went wrong. So let's just say he was on the show in October of 2009. Daniel Gray, welcome to the 150th episode of This Show Is So Gay.
Congratulations on 150 episodes of This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you
so
much. That's what we're told. It feels like only episode 10. No, it really feels like 150. Let's talk, sir, about your, because it is in keeping with the celebratory spirit of our 150th episode. Let's talk about your energy, because how would you, for people who have not met you, how would you describe your energy to other people? And then I'll tell you how I would describe it, and we'll see if we match up.
I don't know. I just like to always look at the positive of things. I mean, why focus on the negative? That takes too much energy. So I just like to be positive and smile, because then everybody smiles.
And then everybody smiles. Because you, sir, have a pretty incredible energy. You have to know that, right?
Well, I just like being me, I guess. I have no idea.
Let me read some quotes from your Facebook page and get your response. Quote number one, I don't try to be awesome. Awesome tries to be me.
I like that.
I would hope that you do.
I don't know. I'm silly. I'm silly and I think of these things.
And then my favorite, I don't like to think of myself as special. I like to think of myself as what, Daniel Gray?
A limited edition.
Doesn't everybody want their own limited edition Daniel Gray?
I would hope so.
Well, you are working on so much. I barely know. I mean, we haven't even had you on the show to talk about For the Sake of Fame. There's so much to talk about, but I'm told that there's a new YouTube channel starting, right?
Yes. I'm starting a new YouTube channel to promote some shows that I'm producing and doing. It's going to be so awesome. Just because I love my music, but I've been getting into film for some reason. I don't know why, but we're doing a reality series, and also I wanted to especially make this year a very get my politics out and get politics of young people and get people interested in politics, and especially the politics of the LGBT community.
Nice.
So we're doing a show called We the People.
Nice.
Which is going to be our online political talk show. It's like The View, but with, I don't know, gay boys. Which is probably just like The View.
It's just like The View. I don't understand even the difference, but okay.
But I feel like the Tea Party is getting too much attention.
Mm-hmm.
Too much attention. So I want to focus on positive things and not whether Michelle Bachmann's a witch.
Right.
And all these other things. So, we're doing shows like that. And Fame Chasers, which is one of my favorite projects, just because I want to show people, not just the young bratty kids on, you know, like The Hills, or those old bratty women who still think they're in high school from The Real Housewives, which is an obsession of mine.
Nice.
I will admit. but people that actually like are striving to do something with their lives.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a complete, you know, jerk to be on television.
No, you don't. It's possible to actually not do either of those things. And then my favorite title of any show anywhere, Drag Queens, DJs, and Divas of LA. Now, I would hope that there are drag queens, DJs, and divas on this show, and that they're from LA.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there are. And
I didn't know if it was a metaphor.
No. There's going to be, it's actually, I came up with it because it's actually the title of a song on my new album.
Nice.
Then put a drag queen, a DJ, and a diva together on stage once on one of my stage shows, and it was just magic. And I said, this needs to be all the time, every week.
I want that right now.
Yes, so now we have that show, and it's coming out, and they talk gossip, and They talk about what's going on in the gay underground. It's going to be absolutely amazing. I'm really excited.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, look, so to not sugarcoat it, there are challenges, I'm sure, associated with being a recording artist in New York City that you really do have to generate your own energy. Talk about some of the challenges that you encounter and how you address them.
There are the challenges. One of the challenges, there's so much going on in New York City to get your name and your music and all this stuff out. It's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and then, of course, you have the New York attitude.
Right.
Where everyone is, we're all friends and we all love each other, but I will break your knees and steal your show.
Oy.
if I have to. I mean, you just have to be consistent and persistent and, you know, just do your thing. Don't try to change for other people. That's what works for me. Mm-hmm. I don't try to change. I'm just me. I'm just Smiley. I'm myself. Because the audience, and not just the audience, but producers and talent bookers, they could read phony,
right,
and fake. So just, you know, be yourself, and not everybody's going to like you, but who cares? As long as you like yourself. That's what I say.
There you go. Well, one of the narratives for this 150th episode is kind of that point where, given the challenges, and as you said, there are many challenges in doing what it is that you do. There's challenges in doing what it is that we do with this show. But tell us about a moment where you realized, okay, there are challenges, but I am so doing the right thing for me right now.
The moment when I realized I was doing the right thing is when I started getting involved in politics and charities, the Trevor Project, and It Gets Better. And I had a lot of my people that were like, you're getting too political, too much. You know, you're a dance artist. You're
right.
Not Barack Obama.
Right.
Calm down on the politics. And I got an email on Facebook from a fan who said that they really appreciated me sticking up for what I believed in. And, you know, it just lets them know that it's not just celebrities, but it's, you know, regular independent artists and regular people out there. And he was a young gay kid, and he said that he listened to my music and it helped him. And that really, that's when I knew that I was on the right path and doing the right thing. And, you know, not just with my music, but with my words and my actions.
Love it.
And that's when I said, you know what, I'm doing exactly what I should be doing at this exact moment right now.
Love it. Love it. So what do you have to say to all those folks who are listening and thinking, oh, there's just too many challenges. I just can't do it. To them, Daniel Gray says,
I say, think positive. Do what you do. Do what makes you happy. Be yourself. Don't ever let anyone bring you down. You know, everyone, let me tell you something. I'm pretty sure everyone told Britney Spears she was a horrible singer, could not sing, just terrible. And now she's one of the richest and most successful entertainers in the world.
Look
so
at
just
that.
Do you and do you be, never give up. Never, ever, ever give up.
Look at that. That's what we have to do. That's how you get to 150 episodes. You can't give
That's
up.
Exactly how you get to 150 episodes.
So now music. We got new music coming out. What's going on?
Yes, I have a new album coming out this year.
This is huge.
Yes, I signed a digital distribution deal with Island Def Jam.
Nice.
So it's me. It's Rihanna.
I was going to say,
and
yeah.
Of course, you know, my personal favorite, the Biebs. Justin.
Oh,
Bieber,
the Biebs. Yes, I often associate you with the Biebs.
He's my new obsession. I bought the Holiday album. I'm not scared to admit it. I bought it. I love it. I
wow.
He has swagger, and I'm very proud to be on the same label as he is.
Now, but what about the Jesus tattoo?
You know, he's Canadian, so we're going to...
Can we do that? Can we just use he's Canadian? And I have to go look up now our Canadian listenership, because I'm going to get the emails now. Daniel Gray said Canadian is an excuse.
It's me. It was Daniel Gray.
Okay.
It's not the show. That's how he's Canadian. They get away with a lot.
All right.
I recorded in Canada, so I love Canada, and they just, you know, that's why I put it off. He's Canadian.
There all right, goes. So people can send your complaint emails to Daniel Gray at thisshowissogay.com. No, there's no such thing.
Yes, there we go. You could, but you know, I love the Jesus tattoo. It, whatever right. he wants to do, whatever makes him happy.
And that is the theme, and that's the theme. So now, where can folks go? Because you have a new album coming out. You have all these different shows coming out. Where can folks go to learn more about all the cool things that you're doing?
Of course, DanielGrayWorld.com, and that's Gray with an A. Or they can follow me on Twitter.
Nice.
Or my Facebook. Twitter is Daniel Gray World, and Facebook is Daniel Gray Official.
You, sir, you most certainly are a limited edition.
Thank you. You know what, Ken? So are you.
Well, thank you. And I mean, because I know that, look, I don't know how you have any free time because you spend all your time matchmaking for me. But with your free time that you're putting out all this great content, it's truly an inspiration to all of our listeners.
Well, thank you so much. And your show is truly an inspiration to everyone.
You.
So congratulations on 150 shows.
Look at that. Not bad.
Yes. Look at, and I can't wait for the 200th and the 300th and many, many more.
Let me just get to 151, Daniel. I'm setting my sights. I'm just keeping things in check. Daniel Gray, as always, a pleasure having you on the show. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Ken. Thank you for having me. And why be gay when you could be so gay?
Look at that. I love when people do our tagline. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you, Ken. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Everyone will scream my name. Come on, come on, see the sights and dreams of the entertainment. Daylight by the end, you'll be screaming my name. Every day for the same old thing.
For everything I do, all for the good.
Leaving you all for no one but me. The flavors seem all for the same old thing.
Some people dream big, but let it slip away. From the fear of success. Oh, that's more room for me, baby.
I'm not like a rest. Hollywood, New York, the UK, not the end. The world is all for me.
Everything I work for and try to do is to make the world happy.
Come on, come on, and see the sun, the dreams of me. Take back your life by the end, you'll be screaming my name. My song's not just here, but all over the place.
All the world is a stage, and up for my game. And I'll do it all for the sake of fame.
Come on, come on, and see the sights, the tricks, the beats, and fashion. Life by the end, you'll be screaming my name. Every day for the sake of fame.
For love of everything I do, all for the good of
pleasing you all, for no one but me. The flavor sing all for the sake of fame.
Lying into utter
All right, folks, and we are back. Mia Mingus is a queer, physically disabled woman of color, Korean, transracial, and transnational adoptee, writer, organizer, and community builder. In July of 2010, which I can't believe it was that long ago, she was on the show to talk about identity, barriers, and so much more importantly, she first introduced me to Janelle Monae. Mia Mingus, welcome to the 150th episode of This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
Well, now that I know about Janelle Monae, it's like a whole different world.
Isn't it? She's amazing.
She's amazing. How are you?
I'm doing so wonderfully. It's beautiful out here in Oakland, California today.
Well, I was going to say from the Facebook pictures, it seems like you might have moved.
I did move. I just recently moved into a house, so I'm really excited.
And not only does it look like from the pictures that you moved, but it looks like it took a village.
Oh, it took a village. It took several villages, Ken.
So much fun. But you're settled in and things are going well.
We are unpacking. So we have boxes that are piled around me as I speak. I can see a glimmer of light through the window somewhere, but it's all good.
Well, I'm sure it's going to progress. It's fun. Unpacking is fun.
It is.
Okay. Now, last time you were on the show, doesn't it seem like it wasn't that long ago? July of 2010, that was a while ago.
I know. I don't know where the rest of 2012 went.
Exactly. Now, last time I asked you, have we conquered ableism? Have we done it yet?
No, we have not. I'm sad to say.
We're working on it. Have we made any progress?
No, I think progress is being made every day from folks who are doing their own work in their own communities and their own networks all the time. And I know there's a lot of great organizations out there, and we're getting there. It's going to take a while, though. I think ableism, just like any other form of oppression or violence, it's passed on generationally. So we have a lot of work to do that is long term.
And I have to say, I picked on that particular ism because you talk about so many different isms, and I love talking to you about just the intersection of so many different identities. I picked that particular ism because I was reading on your website this keynote speech that you gave at the Femmes of Color Symposium. This is a fantastic piece, Mia.
Thank you.
And I want to read just a couple sentences of it. Ableism must be included in our analysis of oppression and in our conversations about violence, responses to violence, and ending violence. Ableism cuts across all of our movements because ableism dictates how bodies should function against a mythical norm, an able-bodied standard of white supremacy, heterosexism, sexism, economic exploitation, moral religious beliefs, age, and ability. And you wrote so much more on this. What can folks do? Because one of the themes of this show, of this 150th episode, are folks that are listening thinking, I need to do something. I want you to challenge our listeners to do something, Mia. What is it that they should be doing that they're not already doing?
One of the things I think that people can do to challenge ableism, because I think one of the most insidious manifestations of ableism, and it's so connected with capitalism as well, and classism and economic exploitation, is this idea of independence. And this idea that everybody should be able to do things on their own and that they can do things on their own and that we don't need each other. And I think one of the most profound and transformative and small yet powerful things that people can do in their lives is to really challenge themselves around this myth of independence, as we call it, and should think about how they could live interdependently. And we talk about interdependence a lot in disability justice work. Because one of the things that ableism does is because disabled people are seen as people that are dependent on other people, that's one of the reasons why people with disabilities are looked at as less than, right, and are oppressed, and the stigma is so great. And so I think for everybody to really challenge themselves on how to live their relationships and live their lives as interdependent and think about the people who made it possible for you to wear the clothes that you're wearing now, to be on your computer, to listen to the radio, whatever it may be. And then also to think about people as not being disposable. I think one of the biggest pieces of disability justice work that we do, especially for queer disabled people of color, is to talk, we always talk about how so many people need the relationships that they have in order to have access. Mm-hmm. So they don't have a lot of leeway in those relationships. And it's often the place where abuse happens. It's often the place where people with disabilities can't speak up or be their whole selves because they're dependent on somebody else for their access. Whereas if we looked at our lives as being interdependent instead of disabled people being dependent on you, thinking about what you're both offering and what you both can give and the differences that you have and building from those differences, I think that could be so powerful and tremendously powerful for all of us to think about and to move from a place of that we truly, truly need each other and that no one is disposable.
So it's an internal, one of the places we can start is an internal paradigm shift.
Yes, yes. I think that is would be great for everyone because, you know, you may not be able to access, you know, go down and help to lobby. You may not be able to help change laws necessarily. You may not be able to do lots of different things that require time and energy, but this is something that I think everybody can integrate into their lives.
Well, one of the themes that we're covering for this week's show is when you encounter challenge, and my assumption is that at some point you have encountered challenge in your life, Mia.
Yes.
Tell us about a moment, because you're in a very, in doing advocacy work, it's a very, you know, it's a draining line of work. It's certainly a passionate line of work. Tell us about a time where you encountered that challenge and you knew, okay, I am totally on the right path right now. This is what I should be doing.
So when I am challenged and then when I respond in ways that I'm like, this is aligned with what I'm committed to, I mean, it's exactly that. I think for me, staying centered in what I'm committed to and connected to what I'm committed to and what I'm moving towards is the best way for me to respond to any challenge. And I am committed towards transformation. I'm committed towards justice and love. And I do believe that there is a way that we can, I think it is political how we treat each other. And I do believe that there are ways that we can treat each other well and also fight for justice. And so when I think about the times that I've been challenged where I feel really proud of how I've responded are the times where I have really responded in ways that are aligned with my broader vision for a liberated world, you know, where no one is disposable and I'm treating somebody with respect and I'm also being, you know, firm and direct about it. Sometimes I talk about it as holding a loving horizontal line with people that we will not move backwards, but we will move together in whatever way towards justice and liberation that we're moving. And there's a way that we can do that where it's not somebody talking over or down at somebody else, where we're actually holding a loving horizontal line with each other. And I believe that is the way that I feel most proud of whenever I'm able to respond to challenges.
Nice. Nice. Now talk to us a little bit about sustaining your energy. Because again, we talk to so many folks who do advocacy work and we talk to folks who burn out. And certainly even in my work with students, it's something I'm always trying to stress of, okay, you have to pick your battles. You have to pick your battles because you might burn out otherwise. How do you sustain energy over a period of time to make the changes that you want to see?
I think resilience and joy, cultivating resilience and joy are responsibilities that we have. I do not think it is just about resisting and pushing back against the world we don't want. We have to be creating the world that we do want in every step of the way. And so to me, what has become one of my practices for sustainability, because you're right, burnout is a huge, huge problem, is that we all take on the responsibility in a deep, committed way that whatever we do, we incorporate some form of resiliency, healing, joy, whatever it may be that is sustaining to you. And that could be art. It could be if you have a meeting, making sure that you take some time to, you know, check in with people and do a little bit of relationship building. It could be as simple as asking somebody to read a poem before the meeting starts. It could be anything. And I think you can do this when you have large gatherings. You can do it in small ways for yourself. Every day, maybe every hour, maybe every quarter of the day, make sure that you take out time to do something resilient for yourself that feeds you and that helps you stay committed to what you are, you know, what you're moving towards.
And one of the areas you touched on is that importance of community. That as it turns out, it perhaps is a little easier to do this work when you're involved in a community and working with a community than doing it on your own.
Yes, yes, you have to. You have to.
Can you give us some tips on how to create more community?
how to create more community. Well, I think one is getting, either opening up your space or getting out of your space more and being with people, and connecting with folks however you can. And that, and again, right, these are the, this is how we make time for what we're committed to. If we're committed to community, then we make sure that we make time in our days, in our hours, in our weeks, that we always are connecting with folks in some way, even if it's online, on the phone, a text, having somebody over, going to visit them, whatever it may be. And I think the more you can do things with people that are resilient, and share your resiliency practices with folks, like I love going to the ocean, so I make sure whenever I go that I bring somebody new, somebody that I love, and then we're able to spend time and kind of like kill two birds with one stone, although that's probably not the best adage to say. It's probably not environmentally friendly. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Now, where can folks go to learn more all about the advocacy work that you are doing?
Oh, people can go to leavingevidence.wordpress.com, and they can also follow me on Twitter, which is at Mia Mingus.
And I just love the phrase leaving evidence, because that's so, it's what we try to do here at the show. I know it's what you do with your writing, with your work. That's a pretty important concept.
So important. We have to document what we do and leave evidence for each other. Otherwise, people will erase. People are erasing us anyways. We have to be the ones to leave our evidence for other folks.
Oh, Mia, you were one of the first people when I was putting together the 150th episode. You were one of the first people I thought of 150 shows. We have to have Mia Mingus back on the show. I could talk to you for hours. Just you see things in such a beautiful way, and it truly is inspiring.
Oh, thank you so much, Ken. I'm so happy to be back, and happy 150th. Thank you so much, Ken.
All the best, Mia.
Bye.
Bye. And we are back one last time. Singer-songwriter Eric Hyman first appeared on this show as So Gay back in November of 2008 on episode number 4. He has since come back to visit twice more, and it's honestly difficult for me to think about doing episode number 150 without him. Eric Hyman, welcome back to This Show is So Gay.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back.
What a long and winding road we've had together.
I know.
It's pretty amazing. I'm sure every time you get on stage, you think, my gosh, I was on episode number 4.
I do.
I know you do. Eric, so much to talk about. First, tell me about this new intersection between singing and cooking that you're putting out there to the world.
Well, it's when you make your hobby your career, it's very strange. I mean, I still love playing music, don't get me wrong, and I still love traveling around, and I'm lucky to be able to still be doing it after all these years. But I have to say, like, I needed a break from it. I needed another hobby. And I don't collect things. I don't have those type of hobbies. I don't know. So I just decided I'm going to take lessons in starting something brand new. And I never really learned to cook. My grandfather was the one in the kitchen most of my life growing up. And his mantra was, get out of my kitchen. So he wasn't the type of person to really show you what to do. So I ended up never really learning how to cook. And then I thought last year to take some time and take a cooking class every Monday. So I did that, and it just fueled this passion to learn more. And once I saw how easy certain dishes are to make and how creative you can be with cooking, I just plunged right in.
What is the Eric Hyman go-to dish?
Ooh, that's a good one. The Eric Hyman go-to dish has to be my crepelah, which is basically ravioli.
It is.
And yes, and you can find the recipe online under all my stuff because I've made it on both the cooking show, my cooking show, Trial and Eric, on Ustream, as well as on our NBC affiliate here in Tulsa.
Well, and as implied by the title Trial and Eric, was there perhaps a dish that you tried that you thought was going to work out super well and then maybe didn't turn out so well?
Sweet potato pancakes.
Really?
Yeah, I just thought, oh, I can totally nail this. This is easy. You just replace, because I make good potato pancakes, so I thought, oh, this should be easy. Just replace, you know, the sweet potatoes with the potatoes I was already using, which was like Idaho or russet. Well, they don't break down the same way.
Okay.
I was warned, and I didn't listen to anybody, and they were extremely grainy.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know what I missed out on, and I'm still kind of studying it, but it's not. You can't just replace regular potatoes with sweet potatoes, I've learned.
This is what we – you've not just learned it. We've now all learned it. Now, this is not to say that I can't say singer-songwriter Eric Hyman anymore.
Oh, you can still say that.
Because it's not as if you're not still doing music.
Oh, I'm definitely still doing music. I need a career.
And what's going on the music?
I'll do my next hobby that might be a career, but you stink all your money into.
How about dog trainer?
I'm not, as anybody around me knows, I'm the type of person who's like, I don't really have it in me to discipline a dog.
So what is going on the singer-songwriter front these days?
I don't know in general, but for myself.
For yourself, yes.
I'm putting out my first DVD next month, so I'm actually on my way in a little bit over to the editors, the video editors, to look over some of the stuff and sit down and play a few songs just by myself acoustic. So there's kind of some different elements. Most of it was recorded on a night, my CD release party in Tulsa for Supposed Unknown, my new CD. I'd used my band, Nomalee Brennett, who I recorded it with, who's an amazing artist
love.
In her own right. Oh, I love her. And she played bass and sing background, and I had a 4-piece string quartet. So some of those songs just sound so lush. So it was really a treat to do that. So there'll be 6 songs on the DVD from that, plus the whole night was recorded with audio, so I'm putting out a matching CD with it. Be available only on iTunes.
And what about extras? Because I think there should be an extra of Tattoo Tour. Could be an extra on the DVD.
These are things I need to know about now. So a Tattoo Tour, okay.
As we've talked about with other guests, some sort of gag reel.
Okay, gag reel.
I don't know. I think that once we get the sweet potato pancakes down, that might be a nice little extra.
I know. Well, I'm putting my music video for Dust on there. I'm putting a few of my cooking segments on there. Yeah, so there'll be elements of that. But a tattoo tour?
I think a tattoo tour.
About that.
See?
And I think I will do that. And your suggestion will be going right into my DVD.
Look how this show is so gay is making a difference all over the world.
Influential.
Yes.
That's what we're going to start saying. That's our tagline from now on. This show is so gay, influential. Well, Eric, we wanted to get your take on what we've been asking our guests all episode long. I know there are challenges associated with what you do. Tell us about a time when you said to yourself, all right, this is difficult. There are challenges, but I am so on the right path right now. This is absolutely what I should be doing.
Personally, when I have to say, like, when I can remember specific moments where I thought, what am I doing here? Nobody's listening to me. This means nothing. I'm being ridiculous. Why am I doing this? It's not making a lot of money. And then somebody comes up to me that night, of course, as it should, you know, how life works out. Somebody reinforces me by saying, you know, that song of yours made me decide to do something else differently in my life, or impacted me in such a way that it made me think of this person who I haven't thought of in a long time. And somebody will come up and say that stuff to me. Remember one girl in Des Moines, it was Omaha, and she said to me, I had a song about an argument between my dad and my sister called Open the Door, where I thought there was a disconnect in their relationship, and I thought maybe by me addressing it, since they both listened to me musically, that I might be able to help it. And I remember a girl in the crowd said she was having trouble with her dad, and she knew exactly what I was talking about, and it made her think twice about her relationship with him at that moment. So, I mean, the fact people commenting on my Facebook page, people like you asking me to do stuff, I mean, it reinforces me to say every moment where I feel like, there's so many singer-songwriters out there. There's so much going on. Why does anybody care what I think? And then, you know, you call me and you say, hey, will you be on our show? And I think, I can still do this.
You can still do this. And I have to tell you, favorite hooks of all of your songs.
Oh, thanks.
That is one of my favorite hooks. And do you have a benefit concert upcoming, or did one just pass? Did I just miss a benefit concert?
I have one upcoming. I'm playing it with my band for the Trevor Project, going out to San Francisco to play this great club called Café du Nord. So that'll be on the 22nd of this month. So I'm pretty excited. My new band has not played out there yet. And I've never played San Francisco with a band. So the people out there, I hope they're as excited as I am.
Do you have a set list all set?
Oh, yeah. And another thing I'm doing today, after the DVD stuff, is we have band practice.
Look at that. And are you the one? Because I would imagine you've now put pressure on yourself that you have to be the one who always brings snacks to band practice.
Oh, yeah. We played some morning thing where it was a marathon, and I brought an apple pie.
Look at you.
And the other band that was playing was like, geez, our singer didn't bring us an apple pie or anything to eat. And I thought, ha.
Look how you're making a name for yourself. You're the guy who brings the treats to band practice.
Yeah, and I would bring some tonight, but I have to spend three. I won't, whatever I would make wouldn't even keep that long.
Nice.
I hope I get my dinner myself.
Well, we're going to get you to go get your dinner. As I said, there was no way that I was doing 150 episodes without having you on this particular episode.
Oh, you really appreciate you saying that.
And because we share the inspiration of Judy Albin.
Of course.
We can't do a show together without doing a Judy Albin shout out. She loves them.
She is amazing, and I appreciate having this show, you and her, all in my life.
Oh, look at that.
Awesome.
Well, we got benefit concerts coming up. We have DVDs coming up with a tattoo tour. We're breaking that news right here.
Oh, yeah.
And we're
serious.
So are we.
Like that. I just don't know. I mean, when you're yourself, you're like, I don't know what people want in a DVD of me. So I've been asking people what songs they wanted me to play. So it'd be neat to do something a little bit different, like a tattoo tour.
There you go. There you go.
Well,
and of course, where can folks go to learn more about all the cool things that you're doing?
I don't know why I even said it. EricSimon.com.
There you go.
ErichSiman.
And suffice it to say, if we do another 150 shows, we can probably get you back.
Oh, hell yeah.
Nice. Nice.
You just call me and I will be there.
Eric, it is just a pleasure having you on the show. You are, I would have to double check this, but I'm feeling pretty confident. You are the first four-time guest on this show, So Gay. It's a resume builder. It's a resume builder.
That's awesome.
Eric, all the best for everything that you are doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ken.
Talk to you soon.
All All right, congrats. Bye.
Bye. That about wraps things up for this 150th episode of This Show Is So Gay. If you were listening carefully at the start of the show, you heard me say that we were going to be welcoming 5 special guests, but you only heard 4. What the heck happened? Well, we actually recorded a great interview with actor, writer, producer Michelle Bonilla and surprise guest Michael Crabtree. They were hilarious. They had great energy. And in keeping with the narrative of overcoming challenges, we kind of have to overcome the challenge of the fact that something went horribly wrong with the recording of that interview, and unfortunately we can't play it back for you all. But we, of course, want to give them a huge shout out. Michelle's got Slip Away, the movie that's coming out on DVD, so go on over right now to slipawaythemovie.com. And then her and Michael Crabtree are working on this web series that's coming out real soon, and they're in the fundraising stage, and it's really, really exciting. So that's called Failing Upwards. So you want to go to failingupwardstheseries.com and learn all about the cool things that those two are doing. And with our, of course, most sincere apologies to them. They were fantastic. Just take our words for it. All right, but that's it. That's it for this 150th episode. So get out there. Go do some incredible things. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com. Drop us an email at ken@thisshowisogay.com. Go to Facebook. Like us on Facebook. Just type in This Show Is So Gay and you will find us. Go do all of these things. Start your own radio show. Get your own voice out there. You'll get to 150 episodes real quick. Didn't take us that long. Okay, it took us 3 years. And while you're doing all these incredible things, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
What are you doing? I've been calling you for days. The phone keeps ringing. I know you're there. Are you scared? You got nothing to say. She's living underground. You always said that you would help, but when the storm rolls in, you're putting up shutters to say yourself. I could say that you've changed, but you could have always been this way, just the same. I'm looking through the winter window, your new family surrounding you. I remember how we once were, and I wonder if you remember that too. And I've learned to get by, just like all of us learn to do, that nest you left a mess.